right. Alright, alright, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. And he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I welcome wrestler and radio personality, the X-Man, Xavier Richards, to the program. We'll look back on his career and cover a lot of the hot topics in wrestling right now. Xavier Richards, welcome to OWW Radio.
Hello.
Hi, Xavier Richards. This is David Buckler with OWW Radio. How are you doing this evening?
I am phenomenal, Buckler. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. I want to welcome you to the show. How have you been?
I've actually been doing pretty good. Getting some rest now, so I can be back in non-tip-top shape at the next PPW show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've known you now for about a year and a half. Had the pleasure working with you at PPW, a promotion here in the East Coast here in Delaware, and for those who may not be as familiar with your work, X-Man, how did you break into the wrestling business?
Well, that's a good question, actually. Let me tell you, it goes back to, I want to say, 96 or 97. First of all, I started out as a fan of wrestling. Mm-hmm. As everybody that's in the business, you got to start somewhere. Everyone starts as a fan. And I happened to be a fan of a show that aired in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, called Inside the Squared Circle. And, I just recently became a caller into the show. They had live call segments. You can call and leave a comment or criticism or a combination of the two, and they play it back and what have you. So, you tune in to listen to your comments, see if they'd answer your question and what have you. And fortunately enough, they answered all my questions because I wasn't a complete idiot like some of the fans were, and I would actually ask decent, legitimate questions, about the wrestling, about what's happening in the wrestling world, or WWE or WCW at the time. And they actually took my calls. And funny story, my best friend, he actually went to school with one of the host's girlfriends at the time, and they just happened to talk about it. And he said, hey, yeah, my friend calls your show. It's the X-Man. So they got in touch with me through him and invited me to do a walk-in on the show.
Back in 1996, we have to remember that this was all fairly new, right? I mean, the internet and internet radio shows, this was kind of a big deal for you to be calling into a program.
Actually, you're right. This is really before. Actually, this is during the real dirt sheets. Like, you had to wait by the mailbox and wait for the dirt sheet to come come in via the postman before you get on the internet. It was right before the big explosion. So basically, a lot of people's resource in our area was our show, or they'd happen to have to subscribe to any of the dirt sheets. So yeah, this was a big deal for me. Absolutely.
You've been involved now with that show for a while. So you did the first show, and I guess they liked what you did, and you kept coming back, huh?
Well, I'll tell you this. I did the first show, and it was nerve-wracking for me because it's my first time on TV, so I was like, oh, boy, here we go. Watch me just botch this. But I actually did pretty good, and they invited me back on several weeks later as a regular on the show. Now, the funny thing was, during my first few months there, the producer's like, I got to tell you something, man. He's like, I have never had somebody in here gather or garner as much initial heat as you have in your first month or so, because everyone hates you. I'm like, well, all right, but I guess I'm doing something right because I'm getting a reaction, it started off a little rocky, but then it picked up, and I kind of understood the nature of the business because, we're a wrestling talk show, so of course you're going to emulate the business itself, and, you have your personas, you have your characters, and the X-Man was born from just me amping up my own personality up like a couple of notches. And, it's the formula that most pro wrestlers try to follow. You buy into your own gimmick. It's the best gimmicks are the people that are extensions of themselves, kind of like how Stone Cold was. Not comparing myself to Stone Cold, but kind of like what Stone Cold said. Absolutely. Yeah. This was during the time when the Monday Night Wars were just kind of like the first salvo was made with Luger crossing over, and it was during that time frame And I had no clue this was going to happen. I had no clue our popularity was about to blow up and take a turn for the better, because it just got really, really out of control for those next couple years on the show. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a lot of weird stories coming out of that.
Well, I was going to just echo your point there, that it was just a monumentous time for the business. And you combine the fact that you had the two companies, WWE and WCW, at war every week, but also the explosion of the technology. I know myself, I was on the internet every single day looking for rumors, trying to find out results. I couldn't get enough of it because it was all so new and exciting. So here, now you're getting, you know, some camera time with Inside the Squared Circle. I wanted to ask you, though, X-Man, even though you were a fan, and here you are in Inside the Squared Circle, what experience did you have with camera work? Anything like when you were growing up?
I actually had no real experience in front of camera. It wasn't foreign to me. You know, I knew certain aspects of it, but that was my first real taste at being in front of a camera, dealing with live callers and having to, you know, work on set. Later through the years, I would learn the aspects behind the camera as well as in front. But yeah, that was my actually first initial experience outside of just, you know, making an ass of myself in the streets, you know, impersonating wrestlers and things that you're building my own audience. You know, so I had some foresight there. I did have some foresight, yeah.
Did you think that you would stay in wrestling or maybe use this as an experience, you know, camera time and getting that kind of experience and take it into some other sport perhaps?
You know, I really wasn't much of an athlete back then. My mom pushed me into a lot of stuff. I did track and field. I did football. I even did gymnastics. And here's an X-Man fun fact. I actually trained with Dominic Dawes, who was a former Olympian in the mid-90s. We actually had the same class. You know, I taught her a few things. No, I didn't, actually. She taught me everything. But, yeah, we were in the same class, and it was just kind of funny because I would do, you know, my impressions there and stuff, and I would just not be paying attention. But, of course, it was me just hogging and vying for attention there. But to answer your question, no, I wasn't sure if this was going to parlay into anything different. At that point, it was just, you know, since wrestling was such a passion for me, mm-hmm. I was concentrating on wrestling, because that was my outlet. You know, that was me hanging out with people that actually had the same exact interest, and we were able to do it on television and able to do it in front of a crowd. And so I think the lure and the appeal of that one aspect, I was kind of had like blinders on, just going straight down this one path, and I was going to see it either to fruition or failure. So, you know, I stayed on that one track, but I don't think I had any other aspirations or thinking I would branch out maybe something else in television, but or in entertainment field, but no, not necessarily into another sport or hobby, kind of like in correlation with the sport. So yeah,
because mm-hmm. we've seen that, right, where a couple of the ESPN co-anchors now, you know, certainly started at WWE and started in professional wrestling. And but when you were doing this, at what point did you say to yourself, X-Man, I want to actually lace up the boots, I want to get trained, I want to start taking bumps, and I want to start wrestling?
Never. Never. Absolutely not. You see, because, you know, reporting on the business, you kind of see the inside of it, you know, and like I say, even before the internet blew up, you know, we'd read the detailed reports of the happenings going on, the injuries and stuff, and I was just like, you know what? I'm already, you know, in my late 20s at that time, and I was like, I have no dreams of getting in the ring. However, someone else did, and that was my co-host, Massive Mike. And we just in passing briefly discussed. He's like, hey, man, I got some promotion, MCW. We're running hot and strong in Delaware. Why don't you come up for a show? You know, he's like, you know, we have a battle royal. Come on up, jump in. Get your feet wet, see how you like it, you know, and take it from there, you know. I was like, whatever, it's a one-and-done deal for me. I'll go up there, I'll do what I got to do. Well, let me tell you something, brother. When those chops blistered my skin, and when I went back through the curtain with my black and blue chest, gassed and just tired as hell, man, it was almost a sense of euphoria, kind of like, wow, this is the natural progression of from being a fan to someone that's actually reporting about the business or the sport that you love and then actually playing it. So having worked and walked that path, step by step, it was like, wow, you know, I never thought about it, but now that I've done it, I kind of want to do it again, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's kind of how I started wrestling. You know, it took a while. I trained with a lot of good people, you know, that are on the indies now, you know. I mean, E.L. Stanley Esquire, Alan Cross, Lewis G. Rich, A-plus Aiken Pembroke, the list goes on. I had a lot of great mentors, people that were guiding me through my evolution in the ring. And it was tough. It still is. I'm still paying for that sin. But it's but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. I definitely am. But yeah, I never thought I'd be stepping in a ring and wrestling at all. No, never in my wildest dream.
I really like that story. I can relate because the first time that I was able to ring announce a match was back in 2011. And I'll tell you, honest, I was so nervous. I was only doing one match on the card, but it was just for months leading up to it, I was nervous. truly, and I went out, I had a six pack before the show just to even like get the nerve to get in the ring. But I will tell you, I kind of feel what you were saying though, because once I stepped into the ring and did the ring announcing and got out, now obviously less physical than what you're talking about, obviously less a part of the show, but nevertheless my part of the show. And once I finished that one match, I said, I can't wait until I can do this again. It was an unbelievable feeling for someone who was a fan my whole life, similar to what you were saying. So I do hear this from a lot of people, that you start as fans, you decide to kind of see how this is going to go, and then once it gets inside of you, it never leaves, does it?
No, not at all. And you know, and this is the thing. Well, you know, and this is why I like to heckle Terry Funk so much, because it's like, you know, this is what this man, this was his passion, this is what he loved. He's retired, he's come back, he's retired, he's come back, he's retired, he's come back. And it's like, I get it now. I used to make fun of him back then, but now I actually get it. You know, I get why, I get the appeal, I get the draw, I get the rush that you get through the curtain, the rush that you get for people cheering or booing you. It's an endorphin rush. It really is an endorphin rush. You know, mm-hmm. now let me tell you, I'm not going out there doing moonsaults and, you know, mm-hmm. Springboard planches. You know, I'm giving you your basic, you know, 1-2-3 textbook match here, you know. But I got to tell you, it's how you're received. It's the energy you're pulling from the crowd, man. And you get what you put into it. This is the honest to God truth. You know what I'm saying? It really is. And not my wildest dreams. I ever thought I'd be in the ring doing what I've admired for years and years to come. I've been a fan since Big John Studd, Hulk Hogan feud. This is I'm dating myself here, but I've been a fan for that long, and that's something that's an impression that kids see. It's like, man, these guys are larger than life, and you know, maybe one day I can do it. You know, and I'm working it. I'm actually doing it. It's great.
What did your family think when you decided to get more into this business?
My grandfather was the driving force for me becoming a wrestling fan, because he'd be the one to take me to the events. And sadly, he actually passed away before he got to see my first match. And you know, it sucked. But I they've mostly been supportive. You know, my brother's a big fan. He brags about me. I'm telling him, please don't, because you'll start rumors that I can't live up to. And it's like, you know, they've been mostly supportive. You know, of course, you know, you got your mom. I don't get hurt, but you know, I'm a big guy now. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna do it. You know, if I get hurt, I get hurt. It's my lesson to be learned. But mostly, it's been completely positive. All my friends have been very supportive up until recently, which we'll get into later. But but yeah, for the most part, it's been positive. Absolutely.
So you mentioned that Battle Royal. You got your feet wet, and it was a good experience. What about your first singles match, though? What about the time you had to come down to the ring by yourself, work a match, you know, without 18, 19, 20 other guys in the ring? How did that go?
Actually, let me tell you, it's a weird story. But let me make one quick point before I get into that. I was so good at the Battle Royals that I was the two-time Battle Royal champion. Yes, there is a strap for that, okay? There is a title, and damn it, I held it. Yes, I held it twice. Longest reigning MCW Battle Royal champion history. You know, I'm just throwing that out there. So, you know, yeah, you don't get the hide as much, you know, and after my battle, after my, my battle royal stint, I was paired up in a tag team, the Varsity Boys, with A+ Aiken Pembroke, and we dominated. But I got to tell you, after that ride was over with the Varsity Boys, after we went our separate ways, for the first time, I, you know, Mike pulls me in the back. He's like, "Hey brother, you know, you guys are doing your own thing now." He's like, "I know you haven't worked singles yet," because believe me, up to this point, it was all tag team and battle royal. So he's like, "You know, I got somebody for you." I said, "Well, that's cool. Who do you have for me?" He's like, he's right around the corner. And it's a true story. So I walk around the corner, and I'm looking, scanning the locker room. I say, "Oh, hey, it's Axel Rotten's there. Hey, Axel, what's up?" So I shake hands with Axel, and Mike's, "Oh, glad you guys met. You can go over your match now." You know, I was like, "What?
Oh, my."
I was like, "Huh?" I was like, "This guy, Axel Rotten, this is like a ECW legend here, you know, and that's like, I'm getting in the ring with this guy." So I got to tell you, bro, I sat in the corner and I literally got sick to my stomach because, A, you know, it's Axel Rotten. It's my first singles match. It's like, this guy's going to pulverize. He's going to kill me. He's going to murder me. So after I got, you know, the anxiety out, I did my breathing exercises, you know, I'm like, all right, we can do this. So I, you know, I talked to Axel. We're ready. We're good to go. And again, I had cold feet. I had cold feet because, you know what I didn't realize was that J.J. Dillon was actually in attendance for that match. He sat, that was the first match he sat down and watched as a special guest to the show. So add pressure of my friends being there, my first singles match, Axel Rotten. Now J.J. Dillon is sitting there watching me wrestle. Match starts, man. I'm going into it. We're doing our thing. And I'm still nervous at this point. I botched the simplest move, an armbar reversal. This is how nervous I was. That's standard textbook, man. And I could just see the look on Axel Rotten's face, man. I could just see the look in his face, and it's just like, come on, bro, get it together. So he goes through the match. You know, of course, he, you know, I can't beat this guy, you know, so of course he rolls me up for the 1-2-3. Understandably. So I'm like, cool. I got through the match. I had a blast doing it. Actually, after I got the nerves out, because I got to tell you something. When you go through that curtain, the day you stop getting nervous is the day you need to pack up. It's simple as that. You got to have those butterflies, and if you're beyond that, then I think it's time to step off. But I got to tell you, it was an experience for me because the amount of adrenaline in that match, I don't think I came down for the rest of the night. I got home. It's like 3 a.m. I'm still wired. That was an afternoon show, by the way. You know, so you can just imagine how pumped I was that whole. But I mean, that was something that's an experience I can have. That's it's mine. You know what I'm saying? It was a first of many things, and I honestly, it was just one of the best nerve wracking days of my life.
And I imagine that working with a true pro like him, you know, with such an advantage to yourself to hit, you know, get you through the nerves a little bit and get a good match out of you. I imagine when you were home and you said you were still wired up, it was looking back towards the match, but I bet you were also excited for the next one, right? Like, when am I going to do that again?
You know, I was. I thought about it. I was like, you know, maybe I have some singles legs to me, you know. Maybe I have, maybe I can make something out of this, you know. I can't remember who the succession of opponents were, but I remember getting through them without that real bad anxiety before the match. I even wrestled Massive Mike, who was the promoter at the time, and got my final win over him in one of my favorite matches. We actually went toe to toe, and my whole history, I owe everything to Massive Mike first and foremost. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't even be talking to you today. So I thought that was just, I thought it was like coming full circle almost. You know, I go and take on the guy that taught me everything, the guy I owe everything to, and I sneak the win out from under him. And I was on cloud nine for the longest time, you know. But of course, my passion was going into tag. I've always appreciated tag team wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I mean, my partner Aiken Pembroke is just one of the best on the indies today. And just being around him, I learned much more than I could in singles matches. So I eventually did go back to tag team wrestling.
We mentioned being a fan since the days of the Hulk Hogan, Big John Studd feud. I also was a fan back then as well. But once you started getting into the business, were there wrestlers either from that era or your current contemporary wrestlers that you tried to emulate and learn from and study?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You can immediately see Randy Savage is written all over me with my mm-hmm. mannerisms, with the way I styled my punches, you know, utilizing his knee drop. Everything I did, I wanted to do just like Savage, with the exception of jumping off the top rope, you know, calling my fear fights. I don't know, but I'm over grounded wrestler, so to speak. But yeah, it was his intensity in the ring. It was everything about him that drew me into wrestling in the very first place. So I think it's natural that you emulate the person that you are, you know, that you're the biggest fan of, you know what I'm saying? Because you want to be him. You want to be like him. You want to be better than him. You know what I'm saying? And that's exactly what I strive for while trying to emulate Randy Savage, a lot of his moves. So, yeah, I'd have to say it's Randy.
For those who are out there thinking of, you know, maybe becoming a professional wrestler, is there an aspect of working a match, X-Man, that is a lot harder than people may even understand? I mean, there's real art and a science to this, isn't there?
Absolutely. You know, just the first question I said, is the match going to make sense? Is, are you telling a story out there? Storytelling is lost now. You know, you look at matches back in even CZW, you know, it's a lot of the glass and the bulbs and the, you know, the barbed wire and the hardcore. They have phenomenal workers there, don't get me wrong. But I think a lot of people, you want to get out there, you want to get your stuff in, you want to do the moonsaults, but is it the right moves at the right time to do these things? What are you trying to convey? What's the story of the match that you're telling? I think a lot of the psychology is lost today with the current crop of talent that's out there. Even you know, speaking of my contemporaries, you know, I'm not calling anybody out, but it's like, all right, well, you know, you get to watch these matches whether you like them or not because you're part of the show. And you're watching for the backstage monitor, like, you know, it's like, why did he do that? I mean, it was cool. Don't get me wrong, it's cool, but why? What was the reasoning behind that, you know? So, you know, the physicality, of course, you know, and it's also the personality. You know, there's so many different, as you mentioned, there's so many different facets and aspects of becoming a good all-around wrestler. It's not just the physical prowess. It's not just, you know, being able to talk in the microphone. It's not just having the psychology. You have to have a blend of all those the facets. You kind of have to be a jack of all trades here. You can get by. You can get noticed on the physical. You can get noticed on being able to talk on the microphone. But you got to be able to give a little bit of everything and eventually build your craft up, and then you can be that jack of all trades. And that was my biggest argument with Bret Hart. And, you know, I'm not the biggest Bret Hart fan, you know, but I won't get into the story because that's something I'll keep to myself for now. But, you know, I got to say, Bret Hart, I got to tell you, this dude, completely overrated in my book, 100% overrated. Owen Hart was a much more complete athlete, wrestler, entertainer than Bret Hart could dream of being. Now, if you watch their match, yeah, that was a great match they had. If you ask me, Owen carried it. But Owen knew how to talk. Owen could fly. Owen was a technician. Owen had everything. Bret Hart could barely get past the top rope. If you think he had a phobia of the top rope, if you ask me, he wrestled the same match over and over. Owen Hart incorporated different aspects. Owen Hart has played both heel and face well, you know, and that's what I'm saying about Bret. The guy couldn't hold a mic. He could wrestle circles around you, but the man couldn't talk. He talked to the mic. I fell asleep. You know.
Yeah.
But yet he's regarded as one of the best wrestlers ever. I don't know. I don't get Bret Hart. But
so interesting, though, about what you just said. So Bret Hart is one of my favorites of all time, but I'm going to tell you why. Because I loved him in the old school Hart Foundation with the pink and the black. And he was with Jim Neidhart. They were the tag team champions. I swear to God, I still have not gotten over the fact that they lost to Strikeforce in 1987. And I swear to you, X-Man, Anvil never gave up in that Boston Crab. He never submitted. They still – but – when they broke up and he became the single star, then his Intercontinental champion, of course, his run as world title champion, I never found him all that interesting. And I realized that I liked him as the tag team partner with Jimmy Hart on the microphone, and Bret could be like the jackal running around the ring. And, you know, they played like the cat and mouse game as heel. They were wonderful.
Right.
But But I agree with you to a point. I didn't love his singles work. And I was always conflicted about that because I felt like I loved him so much at one point. Why don't I love him as much now?
That's fair. Because I'm glad you pointed out, because did you say he is your favorite?
Well, the other guy you mentioned, Randy Savage. Savage is my all-time favorite because of everything that went into.
See, that's why you and I get along.
Yeah.
That's why you and I get along. Yeah.
Well,
all right, I figured it out.
I mean, when you put together the music and the robes and the moveset and the intensity and Miss Elizabeth, I mean, like, if we were kids back then, you know, young teens, where it was, I mean, that was transformative to me. And I was also very lucky that I grew up in Pennsylvania near Hershey, and so I got to see a lot of Randy Savage's big moments in real life. At the arena.
Awesome.
Yeah, and even at WrestleMania 4 when he won the title. So Savage is very, very special to me. But it was the Hart Foundation. They always were my favorite tag team. But I did not love his work as a singles wrestler, Bret. And I'll tell you one more point about Bret Hart.
Sure.
The Montreal Screwjob thing always bothered me. Because it's like, Bret, just drop the damn title. Who cares?
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you. And that's the main point. That's all I can say. You're a contractor being paid to do a job. You know, it's not for you to tell them that you're such an icon in this country. He had an amazingly large ego,
Yeah.
And I that turned me off to him. But if you know, let's go back to the tag team aspect of Bret Hart. You know, the Anvil supplied the power of the tag team. That's obvious. He also had the personality. And then you had Jimmy Hart as the talker, as the mouthpiece, as the mic. You know, Bret Hart. His weaknesses were well hidden within the Hart Foundation. He didn't have many, but those weaknesses were well hidden in the Hart Foundation. And then, for lack of better word, he was exposed when he went singles. Because you're like, oh, God, get the mic away from him. He's dry. He's very dry. Great wrestler, just dry as hell. All right, sorry about that.
Yeah, and I should say, by the way, my third favorite wrestler is the Element Brandon Mercury, the current PPW.
Wow! You've already won me over. You won me over months ago. You won me over a year ago. You don't have to worry. Yes, Brandon Mercury is in my top five greatest wrestlers in history. So I'm with you on that one. Absolutely.
But I want to go back. X-Man 2, your personal experience, you know, and how you said, you know, that first night against Axel Rotten, he got the better of, he got his hand raised. I wanted to ask you, how much do wrestlers care about the wins and losses or about the titles? I know as fans, we care a lot. Are you more concerned with just putting on a good show? How much does that go into it?
Let me tell you this, and this is the honest to God answer, okay? This is not showboating for anybody. This isn't me just trying to, you know, make myself look good here because I'm going to need a lot more work than this one comment. But let me tell you this. What drives me as a wrestler, I want to go out there and my opponent across the ring, I want to make him look like $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's my goal. That's what's important to me. And that's truth. That's it. You could shout me up all day long. Thank you. I appreciate it. And if I deserved it and if I earned it, absolutely, I will wear that title. I'll carry it with pride. But to answer your question, believe it or not, you get a wide array of answers, a wide variety. I see a lot of people are very conscientious about, hey, brother, you need to strap me up quick, blah blah blah. Well, okay, that's fine. And Dan, is that so? In some aspects, I can see the point. You know, it lets them know. The fans, rather, that you're important, that you're a big deal, that you're the flag bearer or one of the flag bearers for this promotion, for this company. Wins and losses, people say it doesn't matter, but it does to them. It does. To me, I don't care. I kind of liked early in my career. You know, I have no problem, you know, doing the right thing. You know what I'm saying? What's right for the program, what's right for the company, what makes sense. I want to do what makes sense. And when I'm doing something that makes sense, I want to make my opponent look like $1 million out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that's everyone's goal is to make the other person look good, it's going to be we're going to have 5-star matches all over the place. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's my goal. But to answer your question fairly, I do believe perception is reality. You know, and if you're if you're constantly losing, then the perception is you're not worthy. There's no surprise factor. This guy's going to lose. So I think people are conscious about that. And it's rightfully so. I'd agree to an extent. But to me, no, not at all.
Now, during your time in professional wrestling, how do you think you've grown as a performer and grown as a wrestler?
I'm getting more and more comfortable behind the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had a presence about me. You know, when I'm in a room, people notice it. I don't have to do much. You know, and it's not bragging at all. It's just, you know, this is what people I've been hearing for years and years now. For people that watch the show, for friends and family, you know, but I could do a lot more to improve in the ring. But I mean, I'm at this point in my career now, I'm not looking to go 30-minute matches, 20-minute matches. I'm not looking to carry the banner for the company anymore. You know, I've got two bad shoulders at this point, you know, in mm-hmm. my career, which is why I've wrestled so sporadically within the last several years. From day one to now, yeah, I mean, I feel I'm a completely different wrestler. And mind you, I only started in the business in 2006,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it really has not been that long for me, you know. But yeah, I do see a difference. I'm more comfortable as a character. I'm starting to believe in the character more now. And I think it's showing. You see a level of comfort with people when they become aware of who the character is they're portraying. You understand? You know,
mm-hmm.
there's a level of comfort there, you know, because there's familiarity with you and the character, and with the connection with the audience and the character. So I feel like I've done whatever I'm supposed to do in the short time I've been a wrestler. I've added some. I would like to think I've added value to MCW, to PPW, and the feedback that I do get. I mean, it's been mostly a positive. So I think I've done what I can do at this point. So which is why I'm in more of an administrative role now,
mm-hmm.
And I'm more of a decision maker on and off camera, if for lack of a better term. So I think I've done the natural progression. So I'm happy.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk more about your role behind the scenes, but a few more questions about your actual in-ring work. And I like the word you used, X-Man, believable, because you said it's difficult sometimes for people to learn how to communicate and present a believable character. Why is it so hard when some guy can have a great body and a great moveset and he's a great pro wrestler, but he can't quite cut a good promo or he can't be a believable character? Why is that missing piece so challenging?
You know, you can train your body easily. The mind-body connection's there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have so many great, amazing bodybuilders. They have that mind and body connection. You can't teach charisma. You either have it or you don't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, I have an ounce of that. You know, thankfully I have some of that because I don't think I would have made it otherwise, you know. I really don't think I would have made it otherwise. But it's challenging because, yeah, you for instance, let's just say in superficially we're talking, if someone gives you a character, I want you to be this truck driver, you know, that's with a bad attitude. You know what I'm saying? Well, if you're a Harvard-educated man, or, you know, you've got, you know, your degrees under your belt, it's going to be hard, for lack of a better term, to dumb yourself down. If that's not mm-hmm. a character that you relate to, you're educated, mm-hmm. you're well-traveled, you're well-spoken, you know, if it's a character you're not into, then, of course, you can't give 100% of yourself. But it's when the character speaks something to you, when you can see when you can see an ounce of that person, mm-hmm. of that character, and, you know, it's like then the connection's there. And then it's a much more natural progression to merge yourself with this character you're given, you know. And a lot of the guys in these now, you know, are playing characters that are true to themselves, you know. I see it in with people at PPW, like, you know, Brandon Mercury is a jerk backstage, he's a jerk in the ring, you know? So there you go. You know? And I love the guy, but he's a jerk. You know? But it's the amount of energy and the amount of believability you give to that character, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you're not married to it, then it's, of course, it's not going to work. You're gonna divorce it, and you're not gonna give it 100% because it's nothing. It's something that's foreign to you. It's something you don't recognize, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was easy because I just, hey, turned myself up a couple notches, and I've been doing this X-Men character since 1996, so. You know, I know this guy pretty well now, you know. Yeah. All I do is look in the mirror and just amp it up. It's me. You know, it's me.
Well, we mentioned Randy Savage. You know, you hear from everybody that wasn't a real stretch what he was like on television. He was like that back in the locker room.
Yeah.
As well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Randy played. Macho Man was Randy Savage. Randy Poffa was Randy Savage. It was, yeah, they were one in the same. And to an extent, you can almost make that same argument for Ric Flair now. I think Richard Sure. Flair, which is Ric Flair's real name, that Richard Flair's gone.
Yeah.
Ric Flair is, it's Ric Flair 24/7. And I think he lost to, I personally, that Richard Flair has been gone for decades now. And it's just been Ric Flair. The limousine riding, jet flying, wheeling, yep, dealing, kiss dealing guy. It's him. It's him.
Yeah.
Believe me.
Looking back, X-Man, on your time in the ring, do you have some favorite matches you had, longest running feuds? I'm sure that over the years, some of it blends together, town to town, match to match. What stands
sure.
out, though, as real highlights for you?
Well, so I have several highlights. Actually, one we talked about was my match with Axel Rotten, which was short and fun and just everything that I thought it would be. My feud with Massive Mike has also been a highlight in my career. We're close friends now. You know, we're close friends, and we rib each other about, hey, you know, I'm still, you know, two wins over you. You know what I'm saying? It's something we just chat back and forth with. And it was just a level of comfort because I know this guy. You know, we've done TV together. Now we're doing wrestling, like legit real wrestling together. Now it's like there's a level of comfort there. So you get to just, you know, have fun in the ring, you know, with them. But I'll tell you the one feud that sticks out, and believe it or not, man, the Varsity Boys versus D-Line, mm-hmm, Black Ice and Body Snatcher. I got to tell you, we went 3 years and three promotions with this feud. It
wow.
ran a long, it ran a very long time. People would travel, like, seriously, from far away to come see this feud. And we gave it our all. We knew each other well. Black Ice and I broke in the business about the same time. Body Snatcher was a few years ahead. And like I said, I've been, my history has been with the Body Snatcher and Black Ice since I started wrestling. So it was really just it was just a level of familiarity with D-Line. And boy, I gotta tell you, we tore the house down and all up and down. PA, Maryland, and just about anywhere in the region, we were there. And we had promoters calling us, booking us from afar, like people we have promotions we never heard of, but they heard of our feud, you know? So it was just an amazing time where we could just go out there and close our eyes and just give just a great match, a great fun match. And I got to tell you, the beatings I took at the hands of D-Line, I mean, I'd be sore as hell, but man, it put a smile on my face. Like, wow, I earned this ass whipping. You know, I earned it. You know, I definitely earned this one. And it, yeah, we went for several years, and we traded tag titles back and forth. So I have a lot of history with D-Line, and they were my favorite opponents. I owe them a lot because if it wasn't for our feud, I'm not sure that we would probably even be in PPW at this point. Mm-hmm. A plus Anka Pembroke and myself. But, you know, it was an opportune time. And, you know, I don't say I want to go one more time with D-Line. I really want to go one more time with D-Line. And just to see if we can pull it off, pull that little bit of magic off one more time. You mm-hmm. know, another fun match I had, one of the funnest matches I had was early in my career against Pretty Ugly, Jimmy Dream and Adam Ugly. That was a fun match. And, of course, my last tag team match against the Hellcats, which was something that I was vying for a very long time. Yeah, we came up on the short end of the stick, but, you know, I'm going to get the Hellcats back. I'm going to pay them back eventually, somehow, some way. But that's a warning to you guys. But yeah, honestly, I had a lot of great matches, but D-Line, I can't say enough good things about that feud.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and I have worked together at Power Pro Wrestling, PPW, in Delaware. And as you mentioned, you are more involved now behind the scenes as well. What are some of the challenges that people may not realize when it comes to putting together an independent show and you know, keeping the sustainability of an independent promotion?
Well, you know, it starts with having a reliable team, first of all. And when we say team, I'm talking about anybody that's got any hand in the promotion, in the booking, in all those aspects into creating the body and the outline of the show. But of course, you have to have reliable talent too. You have to have a pool of talent you can pull from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly, I think, what we have found with PPW. We've got a great assortment of talent. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't say enough good things about the talent pool in PPW right now. But a lot of challenges are, honestly, just finding reliable talent, you know, people that are going to be there for you, you know, because I got to tell you, man, it's tough when you're working in promotion, especially in Delaware. There's a lot of promotions in Delaware, you know, and you've got, you know, promotion here, promotion there, promotion on every corner. And, you know, it becomes hard to have that loyalty, you know. And I would never forbid anyone from getting a paycheck anywhere else. That's just, it's ridiculous to ask somebody to not, hey, don't work for that promotion because I don't like how the promoter looked at me last week. You know, it's ridiculous. You got to let people do what they got to do. But it's the loyalty of them to your company, to your promotion, that speaks the volumes, you know. So I say you got to have hardworking individuals that are going to go out there and flyer and paper the town for your show. You got to mm-hmm. have good booking, which we do have. We have great booking, and you got to be able to pull from a good talent pool of loyal and good workers, so to speak. So, and we have it all. You know, I love PPW. This was the second lease on my wrestling life with PPW. I thought I was done when I left MCW, when MCW closed down and Mike went and did his other thing. You know, I thought that was it. I was ready. I was like, okay, I'm done. But then mm-hmm. I got the call, you know, and, you know, that's where I've been ever since. It's my new home now.
It's a great promotion. I've been honored to do the ring announcing now for a while. I look forward to many more shows with you. And everyone there,
we're honored to have you. We're honored to have you. Let's not get, yeah, we're honored to have you, bro.
Well, I appreciate that, but it, one thing I knew right when I got there the first time, it was a good team. I could tell. I'm glad you said that because you guys really have your act together. I think each show you put on is getting better and better and better since I've been involved. So, I, like I said, I'm looking forward to more of those in the future. One last question for you, X-Man, before we let you go. What would you say to the young wrestlers in the locker room? You know, what advice would you pass down, you know, to those who are just getting their feet wet now? Because I think there's a reality to professional wrestling that some young workers may not initially understand and would,
sure,
lean,
sure.
And would lean on a veteran like yourself to kind of help them along the way. What would you tell them?
I would tell them these exact words. Shut up and listen.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to tell them. That's what I will tell them. That's what I have been telling them. Listen. Listen to the people that have been there. But more importantly, when you're out in the ring, listen to the crowd. Listen to mm-hmm. them. Not just hear them boos, not just hear them. Listen to them. They're going to tell you what they want. It's up to you to decipher that code and give them what they want.
Hmm.
You have to listen. You can't get anywhere without listening. There's so much knowledge to be passed down. There's so much in just listening to the crowd and feeling the match. And that's how you learn how to pace a match.
Mm-hmm.
And that's half the battle. That's half the battle. Knowing how to work a proper match is half the battle. But you got to listen. You have to listen.
Excellent advice for sure. Again, I want to thank you for being on OWW Radio. Please let our listeners know where they can find you on social media.
You know, it's funny. You can find me on Facebook, Xavier Richards. That is my main outlet to social media because, you know, I don't like, you know, just hanging out with the ham and eggers. You know, I don't like to hang with the commoners there. So that's my one. That's where you can find me if you want to send your love or your hate mail. And, you know, you can. We're actually in the midst now of reviving Inside the Squared Circle 2.0 pretty soon. So hopefully we'll get to have you on our show this time. And and hear your story for once, you know?
Oh, I would be honored. Make sure that when Inside the Squared Circle 2.0 launches, you let us know at OWW. We'll post all the information up there as well. I want to thank you again, X-Man Xavier Richards, for being our guest today on OWW Radio. It really was great having you on the show.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
You got it. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you.
And don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David. Thanks again to the X-Man, Xavier Richards, for today's interview. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well that's okay.